Hey everyone, welcome to the Small Screen Couch Commentary Podcast, where we watch your favorite TV shows, give you our thoughts, and ask for yours. I'm Alex.
And I'm Billy. We're excited to watch and rewatch the best TV shows from start to finish and hope you're ready to take the ride along with us.
We'll talk about the best characters and their stories, reveal some hidden gems, and look for you to do the same.
From sci-fi to comedy, drama to anime, we've got it all covered. So grab your favorite snack, and we'll see you on the couch.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 7. Season 2, episode 7.
You can say episode 2 of season 7. You know, it works out. You can say it however you like.
I don't know. I don't know if that maths. But season 2, episode 7 of Small Screen Couch Commentary, The Boys. And let me tell you, this episode popped off.
Literally. There was some popping going on. It was popping.
Yeah. I kind of figured that things were going to start to ramp up, and it definitely did. It was a slow burn or a slow ramp up here, but then once it started to take off, I mean, it was just full steam ahead.
I don't know. I think I mentioned last week how things start to get a little too close to home, and it's weird how it mirrors reality in a way.
Yeah.
And the show start, this is the episode I was thinking of. It starts off with how just, if you have a little bit of power, how just what you say can change so much.
Yeah.
And the show started off with that, and it was kind of like, oh boy.
I agree. Well, first things first, what were you snacking on, sir?
Yeah, I was still snacking on some of that Easter candy, bro. Little chocolate eggs, you know?
Wait, like the Whopper joints, yeah. I think you did mention that before. I'm not a fan of those necessarily. These are just
chocolate eggs, not even Whopper like eggs. They're just like,
oh, just straight chocolate. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that I'm cool with. If it's like the ones that are kind of like Whoppers, like the malt,
yeah,
I can't get
Whoppers
down with that.
Whoppers are okay, but I don't choose Whoppers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. I was getting down on a meal, actually. Some good old-fashioned spaghetti.
Dude, you know what? I had spaghetti the other night. I like it.
You know what, man? I feel like in many cases, the spaghetti is actually better the next day than like the first day you make it.
100%, dude. I've always said spaghetti is better heated up the next day.
I don't know what happens if it's like the sauce has time to just marinate in the noodles more or something. I don't know.
I think you're right. I think that's part of it. But it's a different flavor too. It's weird.
It is. Important distinction I want to try and make real quick, and then we'll move on. When you do eat spaghetti, are you I have my spaghetti and then I put the sauce on top, or do you mix the sauce in?
I mix the sauce in.
Okay. All right. We do that in this household too. I grew up spaghetti sauce on top. And then, you know, when my wife brought me into the world of how it should be, then we put the sauce in.
I think majority of people do like sauce on the side and then pour it on top.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
We don't do that here.
All right. Well, let's go into ratings. Last episode, I had rated things a little bit lower just because it was a little bit slower of pacing. And there wasn't really a whole lot of action until the end. This one, the pacing was better. I wouldn't say it was crazy, but then once the train left the station, it was off the rails. What'd you give it?
I gave it an 8.6.
Wow. Okay. I went higher. I didn't go that high. I went 8.4.
Okay. Not too bad. Not too much of a difference. You know.
Yeah. I want to go back at some point and look at, you know, all the ratings that we've given. To see, you know, I still can't remember like what my highest rated episode was or like what rating it was. I think I maybe gave like an 8.6 at some point, maybe. And I think that might have been my highest.
I would bet our ratings don't make any sense whatsoever.
God, no. Are you kidding me?
It's just
we're shooting from the hip here every week. Like, not even knowing where the target is either.
Yeah, bro. Just hitting the hammer on the back.
We are definitely old school Wild Wild West, just. Mm-hmm.
Ain't no rules out here, baby.
No, none. All right, so let's get into things. You had mentioned that this episode was one that you believed kind of mirrored real life in certain aspects. Let's talk about this. How'd things start off here?
So you got this regular old Joe, you know, and he just has his daily life. Wakes up, loves Stormfront. He has posters of Stormfront.
Yeah.
He goes to school, says goodbye to his mom, stops by a convenience store, I guess,
right.
A little corner store, and pays $1.45 for, I forget what it was, every morning.
Wait, I couldn't see what it was he was actually buying.
No.
The guy's just saying it's $1.45.
It's either energy drink or coffee.
Yo, if you're getting an energy drink for $1.45, I need to know where that store is.
What corner store is that?
Right.
Well, it ain't there anymore. Well, it could be, but not owned by the same guy. So this guy's going on, but as he's going on, you're seeing him see on the news clips of Stormfront and sometimes Homelander going on and on about supervillains that are illegally crossing the border. And, you know, they're slowly taking over the country.
Yeah,
which I want to note later that they mentioned there are no supervillains registered in the country right now.
Well, it's not just that they're saying supervillains are coming and invading the country. They're saying illegal immigrants are coming over, and that any one of them could be a supervillain. So it's not just that they're specifying supervillains. They're just straight up, saying immigrants, illegal aliens, or whatever, and then they're kind of sprinkling in the supervillain stuff on top. So it's
as a fear,
right, fear. Exactly. Yeah, just it's like here's one level of fear, and to ramp it up, any one of these people could be someone with superpowers. So it's just it's crazy, and so this guy's exposing himself to this all day, and it's almost like I think at one point he's kind of listening, maybe it's like I don't know if he's listening to a podcast or he's listening to just the news clips on his earbuds. But it's clearly kind of brainwashing him in a way.
Yeah, over time. And it's, like I said, this kind of is seeing how life was, especially like this came out in 2020. And I remember that time very well. I think everybody does. But the country was so split and the news was just showing extreme sides on either side, right?
Right.
And you're seeing this extreme notion from Stormfront and Homelander. And this guy, like you said, he starts to get more and more into it, and you start seeing his daily routine now isn't going to bed at, like, let's say 9 o'clock. He's now up late watching clips about this on his phone and really getting, like, trying to figure out more about it, falling into these conspiracy theories.
Yeah, do they even at one point show like social media posts that he's watching and stuff?
He's scrolling through memes and stuff. It's real life to a T. And calling people snowflakes, stuff like that. And at one day on his regular routine, he goes to the convenience store and, a car drives by, so it lights up in there a little bit. And he just kind of stops for a second. You really don't understand why.
Yeah, his demeanor changes a bit.
Yeah. So then the next couple days, he's hyping himself up for something. He's getting built up to do something while watching more of these clips. And he gets to the convenience store and he's real shaky. And he pulls out a gun. He starts yelling at the guy, "I saw your eyes glow." And I want to note, this guy is not from America. He's not white, doesn't have blue eyes, not blonde. This guy is not.
We don't know that he's not from America, but he's not white.
Yeah. I would say his heritage.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. But this guy, obviously, his mind must have went to all these conspiracy theories where, like, this guy could be it. He says, "I saw your eyes glow." And that kind of goes back to that car drove by. It looked like maybe his eyes lit up a little bit because the car drove.
Yeah, it was literally just the reflection.
Yeah, so he's freaking out, pulls a gun on the owner of the store, or the clerk, and he says, "I saw your eyes glow. Are you one of those guys?" And he's like, "I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I have a family." Like, he gets real scared, but the dude who's been watching all the conspiracy theories pulls the trigger on him. And obviously this guy is not a soup at all.
Yeah, literally just shoots him in the face. The guy falls back, slumps over, and then is just bleeding out behind the counter. And the guy pretty much immediately realizes, okay, I just killed a regular human, not a soup. And, his face just kind of changes. But essentially, this guy was unfortunately wrapped up in all of the crazy things that Homelander and Stormfront had been putting out there. And they do touch on it. They're like, at one point after that, they're kind of, I think, at a rally where they're talking to a crowd, and they mention, okay, well, the situation that happened with this person and the convenience store owner, we don't condone that. And, we are making a donation to the store owner's family. But this is the thing. They say they're making a donation, but they're making it to
Ezekiel's church.
Yeah, they're not even making it to his family. They're making it to the church in his name. And it's like, what does that even do for this guy's family?
Nothing. You know? And I want to note, so this rally is like, they're loud and like super uppity. Right? But you also know, and this made me laugh. She's like, our hopes and prayers are with his family. And then you see Homelander like, yep, hopes and prayers, hopes and prayers.
And thoughts and prayers, people. And whole thoughts and prayers mantra has been something that has been going around for a very, 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 very long time. But it was around this time, you know, 2019, 2020, in that time era where people were kind of calling it out, you know, and being like, it's not, we understand maybe that initially this kind of was being said to have some good intentions behind it, but it's really not doing anything for any victims of the thoughts and prayers that are supposed to go out to.
Yeah, especially when it's like repeating stuff, you know? So that just made me laugh because, again, you could tell definitely writing this, they were trying to mirror what reality was
absolutely
in this world.
Absolutely.
And it kind of hit, you know, I remember the first time watching this episode during that time frame, and I remember it hitting pretty dang hard.
Yeah, I wonder if I would think if things are different if I watched it when it came out. Because, I mean, I can obviously kind of remember and reflect on the climate of the world at that time, but I wonder if I would have thought differently about it when I watched it.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I think this was a pretty intense opening. Like, you start off and you don't really know what's going on, and then all of a sudden this stuff happens and you're like, what the heck just went down? So
yeah, pretty wild. And I do want to just say the more I watch the show, the more I like how well written it is at times and how poignant it is that it makes certain situations that are in real life, I don't want to say more relatable, but it kind of makes it to a point where it's like you're kind of thinking about it and like, man, this show is all about going over the top, you know, and going to the extremes to portray these characters, but really it's not that different than reality. Aside from the superheroes, like, everything else is pretty spot on. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I think there's a point in this episode, and I think we probably need to actually start talking about the episode, but you see Mr. Edgar and he makes a point like, when has it never been about business? It's always about the money in the world. And he makes that very strong point in the episode. It's like, this is so, like you said, it's still the real world, just with soups.
I don't remember Edgar being in the episode.
Maybe it's not this episode. Either way, at some point, it could have been before, or maybe it's after. I just remember this being something that's said at some point by Mr. Edgar. It's always about the money. It could have been last season, for all I remember.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Anyway, moving right along. Let's move on here, because we've got a few things that happen. Hopefully we can get this all in one podcast here, so.
There's a few different arcs here that happen in the story, with the soups, with the boys, with Becca. There's a lot going on here, and I do want to try and cover it all. But let's kind of maybe try to compact some of it. So the boys essentially are working with Grace Mallory, and also the gosh, I can't remember her name. Newman.
It's Newman. Victoria Newman.
Yeah. She's a congresswoman, I think it is, right?
Yeah.
She's a congresswoman, and they're trying to hold hearings to bring Vought to the carpet for the stuff they're doing with Compound V, with fraud and a bunch of other stuff and whatever. And so the last time we saw the boys, they were with Grace Mallory. She was about to kill Lamplighter, and Frenchie convinces her not to. She says, okay, well, what do we suggest we do with this guy? And essentially they're using him as a key witness against Vought. They're going to have him come and testify at the hearings to, spill the beans and let them know everything that he knows, everything that they've been doing, to kind of pin them to the wall and see if they can finish this once and for all. So they kind of have him under protection, and the boys kind of split up. They leave Huey to watch Lamplighter while everyone else kind of goes off and does their own mission. And so I want to just kind of quickly go through the interaction with Huey and Lamplighter, because Lamplighter is kind of in a state of mind where he's like, okay, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. He's drinking, he's smoking, he is unhealthily watching a lot of porn. And he's just like, I'm just going to enjoy myself because, you know, after I testify, after this happens, I'm probably going to be dead anyway. You know, so he's trying to YOLO it up. And Huey is there kind of trying to, you know, stomach the porn he's watching, which, by the way, not that I want to say hung up on the porn, but the porn that he's watching is like just parody porn of the Supes. And the guy that's portraying Homelander, his name is Home Banger. That is, that, if that is not a porn name, I don't know what
that
is.
That was so good. Yeah. And I mean, and honestly, the porn plays an important part to the characters, right? Like he mentions that it's always watching.
Sorry, you had cut out a little bit there.
Oh, he's watching that where his husband, the husband is watching the wife bang with somebody else.
Right.
He's basically saying Huey and him are that person. Like, we're just sitting on the couch watching everybody else do the work.
Right. Right. Meanwhile, while this is happening, Starlight ends up getting apprehended.
Her mom just ruins everything.
Yeah, she goes to meet her mom for like coffee or something like that. And she's like, when did you get back into town? Her mom is like, I never left. I said to myself, I wasn't going to leave until, you know, I could talk to you and we could start to work things out. And her mom is like, yeah, you know, we should just get away. You and I just go on vacation, get away from everything, you know, so we can kind of clear our heads. And Starlight's just like, no. And she's like, well, it's okay. I already cleared it with Vought. And Starlight's just like, you talk to them? And she's like, yeah, you know, I cleared it with Ashley. Now, mind you, Starlight, she's lost her tracker now. She hasn't really been around the Seven in a while. The last episode when they were shooting the movie, she wasn't there. So they know something's up. And so shortly after that, place gets raided and it's Vought Security. And then is it Black Noir? Black
Beats
Noir.
The crap out of Starlight.
Comes in, beats the hell out of her, apprehends her. So that's happening while Huey is with Lamplighter. They've got her locked in a room where she can't use her powers. And as Huey is watching TV with Lamplighter, he kind of changes it from the porn to the news, where Homelander, I think, is saying that Starlight is a traitor, that they've apprehended her. And so that's breaking news at this point.
Yeah.
Huey's just finding out, and he's like, we got to go save her. Lamplighter's like, dude, she's probably already dead. They've got her captive somewhere. We've got no shot. And he's
Or she's in room 48 or D48 or something like that.
Right.
At the tower.
So he's like, well, okay, well, I mean, you must know where she is. We got to go get her. And Lamplighter reluctantly decides to go.
Again, it goes back to the port. He's like, do you want to be the guy who watches, or you want to be the guy who fucks the wife?
Right.
And they're like, all right, let's go. And Huey's like, all right, we're going to go fuck the wife.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Right. He does say that. they go on a mission then to go and try and bust Starlight out of her captivity. And they get to the tower and they sneak in through this like kind of weird maintenance type vent area. And Lamplighter's just like, yeah, you know, I used to bring girls here and sneak them into the tower here.
Just bring college girls here. And it's showing he's actually a bit of a perv and like a little horn bag. Like,
oh yeah. Well, like, and out of all the Supes and the ones, especially in the Seven, who isn't, you know? They go in and there's like this biometric hand scanner that Lamplighter puts his hand up to, and he's like, either I'm still in the system and this is going to work, or we're about to get surrounded by guards with AKs. Puts his hand on, works. They're able to get into the building, and they're, you know, kind of going through trying to look for where they have Starlight in captivity. And eventually they get to an area then where it's just a conference room, and there's statues of the Seven there. And
it's the main room.
Right. And Lamplighter notices that his statue is gone. And he was just like, well, this doesn't look like, you know, where they'd be holding people. any questions, landlord's like, you know, where are we? And then something happens that I want to come back to, because this all kind of happens. This last sequence of the show happens, and a lot of things then lead to the ending. So I want to leave that where it's at for now to try and kind of go through some of the other things that happened in the show, because it all kind of ties together within the last 10 or 15 minutes. So let's move on then to the rest of the boys and, you know, what they were doing, because they're probably a little bit shorter of a storyline there as well.
Yeah. So we know, so they're all at the house. They decide to split up, and they have some jobs they need to do to help out with the hearing and things like that. So Grace Mallory and MM, they head over to Vogelbaum, which we find out he is alive. He's just, when they get there, they don't let him in. They don't let them in the gates right away. And there she goes, well, tell them Grace Mallory's here. And they have a relationship of some kind. They've known each other for a while.
Yeah, they've got some history.
Of banter when they get in the house. But yeah, Vogelbaum's in a wheelchair. He basically can only move, I'm assuming, his head and neck, maybe his hands.
Yeah.
So we know Homelander really, he squeezed him pretty hard.
Absolutely.
So they want Vogelbaum to testify as well as a witness to all the stuff Vought did at the hearing. And he's like, no. And he points out, like, his daughter's over there. Like, he sometimes the good thing to do isn't the right thing to do, because he wants to keep his family safe.
Yeah, he wants to stay alive. He wants his family to stay alive. He doesn't want to get wrapped up in whatever they've got going on.
Yeah. So, I mean, after a little bit back and forth, it's agreed, fine, whatever, we tried. And I think the most important part of this scene is when they're leaving, Grace Mallory tells them, I'm like, you know, he's right. She's like, I wish I would have got out, you know, way sooner, and now you're in it forever. And MM's like, well, I'll go. She tells me, like, I'll get you and your family on a plane. I can't remember where.
Nicaragua.
Never be seen again. Yeah, never be seen again, and you'll be safe. And he's like, I'll take you up on that when this is all done. And she goes, it's never done.
Right.
And you can kind of tell, like, she's shaken up, because obviously her grandkids died because of her being in this. But you can see she says something about not getting revenge for your dad, all that stuff that never actually happens. Just spend time with your family. But MM, he wants to finish the job.
Yeah. Once again, just adding to why I like MM so much, he knows in the face of adversity, in the face of basically being told, hey, look, you're doing all of this for nothing, he still wants to try. He still wants to try and do the right thing. And again, it's like Vogelbaum said, sometimes the good thing isn't the right thing, because the good thing is something that's going to benefit you or people you know or whatever. But it's not necessarily the right thing. The right thing is more often something that is going to be harder to do. It's going to be something that, you know, isn't necessarily going to benefit you directly. But MM, he wants to do the right thing.
Yep.
No matter what.
Oh, yeah. MM's a great character. And what's funny is I've told you how he's grown. Like, he always grows on you throughout the whole show. It doesn't stop. You know what I mean? He's just the man.
Yeah.
But at this point,
Billy, he's on his own adventure as well, because he gets a phone call
from his mom.
Yeah.
And his mom's like, earlier in a different episode, you know, from his aunt that they're coming to New York. His mom and dad are. And then the mom calls and he's like, I'm not coming to see you. I told you you shouldn't have came, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, your dad died. I need to see you. So he's like, all right. You can tell he doesn't have a really good relationship with his parents from previous episodes. So he gets there to a hotel room, sees mom, and she's like, all right, well, they're talking for a second. She goes, now don't hate me. And they're walking out to the balcony. And he's like, why would I ever hate you? And you come out, and there's a guy on the very old man on the balcony. Come to find out, his dad is not dead. She lied to just get him there.
Yeah. She and said, man, I knew you weren't going to come if I didn't say that.
This is an interaction. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. For sure. For sure. This one kind of hit home for me a little bit. Not that, you know, the relationship I have with my dad and me is anything close to Billy Butcher and his dad, but certain aspects of it, I think any father son, you know, has those kind of moments, maybe not as intense as they did, but they have those kind of moments from time to time, you know, especially when you get to the time you're an adult, there's parts of it that are relatable for sure. I do want to just mention, so the guy that plays Billy's dad, is the guy that plays like the interim king in Lord of the Rings, who has that famous scene where he's biting with that tomato. And that's all I could think of the entire time during this scene was that tomato bursting. And so Carl Urban was also in Lord of the Rings. So, you know, a little fun connection there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But they get into a bit of an argument. And it basically saying that, like, he let Lenny die. And they kind of were blaming each other for Lenny's death at some point.
Yeah, Billy's little brother, Lenny.
Billy's little brother, yeah.
He, we find out here, I don't think they mentioned it before. They mentioned that he died, but they don't mention how.
Yeah.
They mention here his dad tells him that, you know, he stuck that gun in his mouth and killed himself, you know, because he wasn't as strong as Billy. He wasn't as hard as him. He raised them up, you know, both the same, and Billy's like, well, you beat the both of us. You know, you were a terrible dad. He's like, yeah, but, you know, there's two kinds of people in life. You either sink or you swim. And Lenny sank.
Yeah.
And you swam. This
terrible dad.
Terrible. And
so Billy finally loses it and, like, just hand around his neck, puts him against the wall and says, you're a monster. And Billy's dad, like, says, takes one to know one. And just is smiling the whole time.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see where Billy has become this person because, I mean, look how he was raised, you know? He's pretty dark because we find out later how dark he really is in this episode.
Right.
But I think he would have killed his dad, and then, like, the mom comes out, stops him, and he backs off. And
yeah, and she even mentions to Billy, like, you know, look, he's not dead, obviously, but he's dying. He's got colon cancer, I think it is, and she's like, he doesn't have much time left anyway, so he's going to be out of your life, you know, pretty soon. But yeah, Billy leaves there, and
that's a hell of a goodbye, huh?
Yeah, I mean, again, I have never gotten to the point where, like, I've gotten physical with my dad or whatever, but every father-son relationship has points where it's tenuous and whatever, but this was, like, on a whole nother level, you know, than anything I've experienced myself personally. But it just kind of made me a little bit sad, you know, because it's like Billy really at this point in his life doesn't have anybody that really cares for him or looks out for him or whatever, or at least that he thinks that way. He doesn't think he has anybody in his life. The only person that he's even thinking is kind of in his corner is Huey. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of sad that Billy just is feeling so alone, you know, doesn't have his younger brother who, you know, he loved, his parents, the relationship is terrible there, you know, but more so with his dad. Felt kind of bad for the guy.
Oh, yeah, you definitely do. And then I say we just keep riding the Billy train here for a second.
Yeah.
So he goes to drink it off, but he gets a call from Grace Mallory saying, hey, we failed to get, what's his name again?
Vogelbaum
to testify. And he's like, I'll handle it. So he gets the Vogelbaum, and Vogelbaum doesn't want any visitors. He says, I think he'll want to talk to me. It's Billy Butcher. So he goes in. And Vogelbaum's trying to explain to him, like, hey, I already told Grace Mallory. He's doing it in a nice way. Like, I just can't do this. And he tries to explain the reasons, but Billy takes a chair and just scrapes it across the floor while he's talking.
Yeah, cuts him off completely.
Doesn't let him finish. Yeah, and it's just super loud. And I don't know why, but that made me laugh so hard.
Oh, I did too. I did too, absolutely.
Like, what a dickhead. So then he sits down. Again, Vogelbaum repeats, like, I am my daughter. I don't want to get her hurt. And he goes, Billy basically just says, well, look, you say no, I'm going in that room, and I'm beating your daughter to death. And then he goes, I'm going to go find your two sons, their wives, and their kids, and I'm going to kill them as well. And you're seeing, like, man, he probably would. But yeah, Vogelbaum is questioning it. He's like, are you really that evil? And then the daughter comes in with some tea, and you see Billy's face just go from serious to, like, this fake smile, and it was evil. It was really evil,
100%.
I had a good cup of tea in so long, thank you so much, sweetheart, and, like, he's real nice about it. And then he looks at Vogelbaum with this evil smile, like, yeah, I'm gonna kill her if you don't.
Yeah, the whole time he's sipping the tea, he's staring right at Vogelbaum, and he puts the tea down, and he just gives him this look that he's like, you know, I'm gonna follow through with what I'm saying, you know. He talks a lot with his eyes in that part.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty wild. I've really, like I said, you see Billy is kind of evil and dark in some ways. And you can see, like, being raised the way he was. They kind of give you that quick, like, he is where he is because of how he was grown up, and then they show you the way he is.
Yeah, and I want to just stay on Billy for a little bit here because, you know, from the beginning of the show, we kind of all got the impression that he is the way he is because of what happened to his wife, you know, with Homelander and everything like that. And that had been the main motivation for him. And as time goes on, we kind of just see, and it's revealed here, that Billy's always been this guy. Billy Butcher, the way he is right now, he's always been that guy. But essentially, you know, when he got with Becca, he was putting that aside for the betterment of his relationship with her. So it's not that Homelander and what he did to his wife caused him to be the asshole that he is, the bad ass, the bad person that he is. He's always been this way, but Becca was the only thing that kind of kept things in check.
Yeah, Becca brought out the good in him. You know, it was one of those
the really little bit that was left. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, pretty sad. Like you said, it makes you feel bad for him because he does good relationships in his life, and it was Becca. She got taken away, and now it's Huey. Sounds too sometimes, you know. But then Huey also reminds him of Lenny a lot,
right?
So that's also pretty intense.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we should move to the soups then before we go back to Huey and Lamplighter, because you know, like I said, things kind of culminate towards the end there and come kind of sync together. Let's talk a little bit about Homelander and Stormfront, because
let's get Queen Maeve out the way. She says one quick scene, I think.
Well, I'd rather do her after, just because when we go back to Huey and Lamplighter, that's where Queen Maeve kind of comes back into play a little bit. So I want to leave her until after we talk about Stormfront and Homelander, because that'll kind of tie things up nicely. Homelander and Stormfront, you know, they're obviously still very much in the honeymoon phase of their relationship, and it's kind of weird seeing how these two evil people are just so in love, you know, because it's like you have the two opposite ends of the spectrum. You've got hate on one side, love on the other side, and somehow they're coming together in this weird, twisted, disgusting relationship. And it's just crazy to see it.
Oh, yeah. Their relationship is so weird to me. Even like, I don't know how to get into it. Just all the way they love each other, the way they make love. But either way, they're at a rally and they're doing their thing where they're talking about close the borders, blah, blah, blah. Getting everybody on their side. And as they start to close out the rally and get behind the rafters or whatever, Stormfront's got her eyes. I'm going to be honest with you, man. So I forgot what this episode was about. So she has her eyes on a woman and a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought she was angry, because I'm not going to lie to you, because of how racist she is. There was a black woman in the background at the rally, and I thought she was mad she was there. And I was like, is she going to do something? Like, no, I don't remember her doing anything like that. And I was like, it confused me for a second.
I didn't pick up on that. I didn't pick up on that. You know, when she was watching, her behind over Homelander's shoulder and seeing this lady, I immediately kind of went to, okay,
where the show went, right?
I immediately went to she's having baby fever, you know, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, so then once I realized what was going on, I completely forgot this episode, and I thought she was, like, missing her baby, and I thought Homelander was like, okay, well, let's go fuck and see if we can make a baby, you know what I mean?
I kind of thought that's what was going to happen, too, because I'm not sure that they've ever mentioned or talk about, you know, soups when they're in relationships, when they have babies, you know, they never talk about that, really. If soups have babies, because Ryan, Homelander's biological son, he is, you know, from everything we've seen, the only person that's born with powers. So you have to imagine with all this stuff going on, soups have had babies before, but they must just come out normal, you know. But I also
kind of maybe they haven't had babies before. I don't think they have.
Well, so, and I'm just kind of making this up in my head, which may or may not be good, but I'm assuming they have babies. And then the Supes are all kind of ran by Vought, obviously. So when they are having babies, Vought's probably just giving them Compound V from the gate and be like, oh, look, you have a baby, you know, with superpowers already. I don't know.
That could be.
Spinning the wheels here. But in any case, Homelander sees that she's looking at this lady with her baby. And he says, hey, I want to take you somewhere. I want to show you something. And so they cut then to a like stop action animation of Lego characters. And they're playing out a movie. And I'm trying to remember what movie it was off the top of my head here. Is it?
It's The Blind Side.
The Blind Side. That's right. That's right. With Sandra Bullock. And she's playing the Blind Side, the story of Michael Orr. And so it's it's being made with these stop motion Lego characters, and Ryan's doing voiceovers of the lines from the movie. And we see here then that he's showing his mom, and I apologize.
Yeah, no, they just show up.
Yeah, Stormfront and Homelander show up, and so they're watching that. Homelander's kind of just like, oh gosh, like he's not impressed necessarily, and Stormfront kind of gives him this look, and he's like, "Oh, that's is
really great,
great, yeah." And I forgot to mention the stop motion thing came after Homelander and Stormfront showed up, because they were all in the backyard chilling.
Yeah,
they showed up, and Becca was not expecting them to be there, but he's like, "Hey, Ryan, I just wanted to drop in. Also, I wanted you to meet my girlfriend, Stormfront," and so they're. They're there talking, and Becca's is clearly, you know, kind of upset that he's there, because she wasn't expecting him to come back at all, or ever for that matter. But he's there, and they kind of have a little conversation, and he's just like, yeah, I think I'm going to be around a lot more because I want you to get to know Stormfront. And Becca's just not happy about that. She doesn't really care that he has a girlfriend, but she does not want him to be around more.
Yeah, or I have another soup around that obviously Dayton Homelander probably not that good of a person.
Right.
And they keep overpowering Becca in every turn here. Like, they're at one point she's like, I wish you would like call when you just and let me know you're stopping by.
Yeah.
And Stormfront cuts her off and is like, well, it's his son. He can come over whenever he wants. At one point after watching the stop motion Lego thing, Stormfront's like, well, don't you do any kid things? Like, you like watch PewDiePie or play NBA 2K. And like, what's that? And she keeps going like,
or go to Vaultland.
Yeah. He should be doing this. You know, he should know, blah, blah, blah. And then, so it gets to a point where at first you think like Becca pulls Homelander off to the side and is like, I need you, just like you wanted your mom around and you didn't have one. Like, I know you understand. And I know deep down you care about him. And I'm telling you, the best thing for Ryan is to be here with me.
Yeah.
And like at first watching the scene, I'm like, oh yeah, he seems like he cares, you know, he's gonna listen to her.
Well, and here's, I want to, before we get where the rest of this whole scene is going, I want to talk about a couple of things. One, what Stormfront was saying, I kind of half agreed with, you know, Ryan's had this whole sheltered life and he hasn't. He's had as normal of a life as he could, but he doesn't do what normal kids do. There's no mention of, you know, friends ever, or, you know, what he does. It's just he hangs out with his mom. He goes to his lessons. What is he? Piano lessons or whatever. Like, he does some stuff. But, you know, when her saying like, hey, you should play 2K or this or that, whatever, I kind of half agreed with her. But there's Becca, obviously. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think you're 100% right, because there's, even when Homelander is having that conversation and he's with Becca, he says he should see the outside world, you know, and I think he's being serious, like, as a dad, I don't want him to be so locked up that when he sees it, he'll be so scared. And there is a point that it's true, but again, like, there's not much you can do here. I don't think Becca has that much control other than just trying her best to be a good mom.
Right.
Vault has her locked in this compound.
Right. And well, the thing is too, she realizes that he's saying these things and being, you know, so upfront with Ryan, not because he actually wants him to have this normal life, but he wants to be able to convince him to go away with him. So that's why she's trying to convince him, like, no, he needs to stay here. He needs to stay with his mom. And you're right. Homelander does seem like okay, I kind of see where you're coming from, because I didn't have a mom. I was kind of just in a vault facility my whole life, and I turned out the way I did. So maybe you're right. You know, it does seem like he's kind of coming around to her side of things. We quickly find out that not so much the case here.
No.
You know, when we go back to some other scenes with other people, but when we come back to Homelander, Stormfront, Becca, and Ryan, Becca is walking up to Ryan at some point. I think they're in the backyard. Homelander had been
outside.
Yeah, had been talking with Stormfront and Ryan outside. Becca comes out. Ryan turns around. He just got this look on his face, and he's like, "You've been lying to me." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "They flew me up there. I saw this is all fake. This town is fake. This facility is fake. This house is fake. You're fake. You've been lying to me."
Yeah, when he said you're fake, I was like, damn, like that's the only part that's probably real, you know? It's like,
Right, right.
That didn't feel good.
And I mean, like, he's not wrong necessarily. Like, I'd be upset too if I pretty much find out my entire life up to this point has been a lie. And he's a kid. He doesn't necessarily know that, she's doing the best that she can to raise him given the circumstances, but two, she didn't really have a choice necessarily.
No.
You know, with all of this.
No, I think she tries to say that, but obviously, you said he's a kid. That's not what he's going to hear.
Right. And so, of course, Stormfront and Homelander, they're just pouring it on. You know, they're like, yeah, you know, you are a liar. And they unfortunately grab Ryan, scoop him up, and fly the fuck out of there.
She pulls Ryan and puts him behind her.
Oh, true, like, true. Yeah.
And then. Yeah, then Ryan actually pushes her aside and runs to Homelander.
Yeah.
And then that's when they fly off and leave. Now,
and that had to hurt. That had to hurt her.
Oh, she's like reaching up to the sky and like everything like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, man. But what's crazy to me is like, so this happens. And then, I mean, not early, but fairly early in the episode, there's still a lot more scenes with Homelander and Stormfront. They're out at another rally or doing interviews. It's like, where's Ryan at? You know what I mean? We find out, but like, it blew my mind. Like, oh, they get him, and also they're like, yeah, we're not spending time with him right now.
Well, and you know, this whole situation, then when they flew off with him, my mind went to two places. One, what's going to happen with Becca here? Because at this point, she doesn't have anything. The whole reason that she was going along with this and doing what she was doing was for the sake of her son, right? Even her long lost husband, who tried to come and get her, she didn't want to go with him because she loved, you know, her son and wanted to protect him. Now that he's gone, and you know, I think she thinks, okay, well, Homelander's not going to necessarily let anything happen to him or whatever, but what do I have to live for now? So my mind went to what's going to happen with her. But then the next place I went to was, is she now going to call Billy to break her out of there then? Because it's like, okay, well, if I don't have my son, I've got to get out of here. Is she going to call him? And if she does, what's he going to say? Because he, you know, left when she said that she wasn't going to go with him. And he was pretty heartbroken afterwards, but is he going to now just come and be her knight in shining armor? I'm wondering if that's going to happen here. I'm assuming it is, but how's that going to play out? So I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, it's been just her and Ryan for 9 years. So it's like, what else does she know? And she probably misses the hell out of her son within that instant, you know? Yeah, so do you want to stay with Ryan here? At one point, so they come back from all their rallies and everything, and
I don't think they show him anymore after this.
No? Okay.
I don't believe so. I mean, unless I miss something.
No, you might be right. I think we just don't see him anymore. That's what it is. So it's like, point is, why do it, but then not spend time with him? You know what I mean? You figured like there'll be more interaction. But anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, so I want to go then to the Deep and A-Train, because the last time we saw them, they were kind of interacting with each other with Alistair, the leader of the Church of the Collective. So when we see them here, they're at a big party. Alistair's having a party, and A-Train and the Deep are there. A-Train gets, the Deep, he's with his wife, his chosen wife, and they are in a photo booth taking silly pictures and laughing and this and that, yada, yada. They come out. A-Train comes to the party. He's like, oh, hey, glad you're here. A-Train gives him a fish bowl with some fish in it, or a fish, I should say. And he's like, I just wanted to get you this as a way to say, you know, sorry for all the stuff that I did to you and, you know, whatever, yada, yada. And it literally puts such a huge smile on the Deep's face. He goes and he like puts his head up against the fish oil. He's like, oh, man, he knows my name. So he's super happy about it.
Oh, yeah. Another moment where it's just like him and his freaking fish.
Yeah. The whole bit with him and talking to his friends in the sea and all this stuff. It is just hilarious every time it comes up.
Did you get the feeling here too? Like, obviously, A-Train was trying to make amends, right? But do you feel like it was just A-Train, even when like they hugged it out, he's like, "Yeah, man, you're welcome." Like, you know, it wasn't really that into it. He was just trying to keep close.
I kind of got a little bit of that. I don't necessarily think A-Train was there with ill intent, but I don't think his whole heart was in it. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he was just doing it to do it. Because he's still focused on getting back into the Seven. And so...
this is what's going to help him.
Right,
because even in this moment, Alistair come, you kind of find out it's his birthday party. He's like, hey, good things are happening. You know, Stormfront got caught. I mean, not Stormfront.
Starlight.
Starlight got caught. You know, stuff's happening. They need people they know that are going to be good to Vault.
Yeah, and reliable soldiers, you know, I think he even says at one point, or something along those lines.
Yeah, something like that. And he, you know, so they're like, that's you two. So it's like really good news here, you know. But right. I think the crazy thing here that they talk about is like, what do you think about Eagle the Archer?
Yeah, now mind you, Eagle the Archer, we haven't seen him in a while. It's been a few episodes since we've seen him. But he's the guy that recruited the Deep to Church of the Collective, got him out of jail, bailed him out, you know, been nothing but nice to him. And it's funny because as soon as he mentions him, Deep's like, oh man, yeah, that guy is such a good guy. He's like a brother to me. And he was there for me when I was at rock bottom. And immediately Alice is like, don't ever talk to him ever again. And Deep's
he's a toxic personality.
Now that I think about it, he was pretty toxic.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in that moment too, A-Train looks at him and is like, what? Like, that's you literally went from this guy's like my best friend to maybe he's not. And so that kind of throws A-Train for a loop a little bit.
Yeah, to where the Church of the Collective is just controlling whoever they have underneath them.
Right.
Do whatever they ask. Because, Eagle's saying bad things about the Church of the Collective. Like, they didn't help him like they said they would.
Right. He says that the program failed him. But he says the program didn't fail him. He failed the program.
Program.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, you know, he's just giving the BS propaganda for the church to them. And it seems to obviously work on the Deep. But A-Train kind of is on the fence, it seems, about it. So, yeah, they're there at the party. They're having their fun, whatever. At some point later, then we see them and they're at a bar and they're talking and I think they even see a clip on the news of Eagle the Archer, and he's, you know, just saying how the church is not good and this and that, yada, yada. They get the therapist, teacher, mentor lady, Carol, and she's saying how Eagle the Archer was somebody who, you know, was not a good member of the church and basically just throwing him under the bus and whatever. And A-Train even kind of questions again. Because Deep is just like, oh, man, I can't believe it. This guy, you know, did what he did. And A-Train's like, well, I thought that was like your best friend. And he's just like, oh, no, I don't want to talk about it. And he gets the bartender to change a channel. But, the Deep and A-Train, they're two guys that, you know, at the beginning of the show were on top of the world. They're members of the Seven. And now they're kind of both at this area where they're on the outs and they're trying to get back in. And so I'm wondering what's going to happen here with them moving forward, because they are trying so hard to get back in the seven, but I wonder, like, do they really want to get back in the seven because they're, you know, wanting the money and the fame or whatever, or is there something else going on? I'm wondering, because they're part of the church, or at least the deep is. And so I'm wondering, there's got to be some other motivation that is pushing them to get back in there. So I'm interested to see where that storyline goes.
Yep.
We shall see. So let's go into Maeve here then, because after that, then we kind of get back into the boys and everything that happens towards the end of the episode here. Maeve, when we last saw, she was with Elena, who had found out that, you know, she and Homelander let that plane go down, and Elena's very upset. So when we see her here, Maeve is kind of bringing some takeout into the apartment or whatever that she's at with Elena, and she's trying to kind of just have small talk, and Elena's just not having it. And Maeve is picking up that she's upset with her still, obviously.
Yeah. Elena says, hey, I'm going to go stay with my sister for a while here. And basically she can't handle what's going on. Maeve seems to think that it's still like about Homelander. It's not. Elena can't handle that the plane happened, and she starts to think what other things have happened, you know, while you've been in superhero. And Maeve even goes like, you wanted to see the real me. You've been begging to see the real me. I showed it to you and now you're leaving. And Elena even apologizes for it. She's like, I know, I'm sorry. Like, it's pretty sad, because you can see Maeve's like, she's heartbroken.
Right, and, right. She flips the table over at one point. I mean, it's like a huge table, and she just flips it over like it's nothing.
Yeah, it flips a few times.
Right,
you know
right.
What I mean? It goes flying across the room of her apartment. So you can definitely tell she's real upset, and there's like, she's like, just stay. And she's like, I can't. Like, this ain't happening.
Yeah. And Maeve, you know, she is somebody who of when we talked about it the last episode, as far as the soups go, she's probably the worst of the bad. Or I'm sorry, the least bad of all the soups. She's not a good person, but as far as the spectrum of who is bad, where Homelander and Stormfront are at the top, she's probably the lowest of all the bad people. You know,
yeah, for sure.
So yeah, Elena decides that she's going to leave her, and you know, we find the next scene that we see Maeve in. Then Ashley is coming to her apartment at the tower, and she knocks on the door. She comes in, and I think she's trying to like let her know she needs to. She's been looking for her, and she waltzes into Maeve's bedroom, and she's in bed. Post nut clarity with a guy, and she's like, this is not on brand. Like, you're supposed to be our lesbian poster child. What are you doing? And she's like, oh, Elena left. And she's, I think she's getting high, even or if she's not vaping, she's not getting high.
She's vaping something.
Yeah, she's vaping something. I don't know if it's marijuana necessarily. It doesn't matter. But you can see she's kind of just
depressed.
Yeah. She's just got a blank expression on her. She's there, but she's not really there. And she's just there because she's trying to numb the pain with whatever guy she's sleeping with or whatever she's vaping or whatever. And Ashley is trying to tell her, she's like, no, we're going to get Elena back. She's going to be back in your arms. Everything's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of this. And Maeve is just like, Ashley. And she's like, no, look, it's fine. We're going to get her back. It's going to be fine. And she's like, look, Ashley, like, for once in your life, like, be a human being. And you kind of see for the first time Ashley actually has, like, a small sliver of humanity. And she just says, I'm sorry.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really sorry, Maeve. Yeah, which is a good scene there to see Ashley does have some humanity. I don't know if she's a good person, but, God, she goes through a lot as a freaking regular human. It's not a soup. Like, she.
Yeah, I mean, she the stress is.
She has. I would never want that job.
Not at all.
Even if
not
they even the for good people, I wouldn't want that job.
No. So Ashley leaves the apartment, and you know that's that. We do see Maeve another time after this, but yeah, she's pretty much at this point where she's just not really herself anymore. So let's circle back here then to Huey and Lamplighter. They're there trying to break Starlight out of captivity.
In front of the statue.
Yep. Lamplighter realizes that the statue that they had of him was gone. Now, I don't know how you took this, but when they retired him, you know, and they pretty much, it's revealed, you know, through the last episode in this, that he was pretty much forced into retirement, you know, whatever. But when they retired him, they did away with everything with him and bringing in Starlight. So I'm just not understanding why he was surprised that his statue was gone. Like, you would think, if I'm not in the Seven anymore and they've got someone else in the Seven, why would my statue still be here? I don't know how long the Seven have been around necessarily. And even if he was part of the original crew, I'm just not understanding why he would have been surprised his statue was gone. I think, you know, maybe with the reason that he wanted his statue to be here, maybe that plays into it a bit and his confusion, but I was just kind of taken aback by that. What were your thoughts?
Well, so you would think that, right? Because Starlight's now on the statue and he's not. However, Translucent is on the statue and he's not in the Seven anymore. So I have a feeling
that's true.
The Seven, you know, is supposed to be a group for a while. And that statue probably is supposed to be of, like, I guess the main group that was there. Because he's been on it. I mean, even I think season one, he was on the statue for a while before Starlight was put on it.
Okay. All right.
But he also, he's pretty much crazy by this point, as we find out.
I don't know if I want to say that he was crazy, but he definitely was not
himself.
He was not himself, not in the right state of mind. And yeah. Huey is confused because he's thinking, we're going to come here to bust out Starlight. We're here to save Starlight. And when he sees that they're not anywhere that's around, like, holding cells or, you know, anything like that, he's kind of just questioning. And Lamplighter goes, man, I really wanted to do it in front of the statue. And he was just like, what are you talking about? And he's just very confused. And at this point, I kind of had an inkling of what was about to happen. And he walks into the conference room that they're in front of, and he turns around and he looks at Huey, and he's just like, I just wanted my dad to be proud of me. So there's another tie in here with, you know, father-son relationships and how tenuous they can be, how broken they can be sometimes. You know, they don't really give us anything else, but immediately after Lamplighter says, I just wanted my dad to be proud of me, he has his arms out and boom, lights himself on fire. Whole body just roasting. And Huey is just like,
screaming.
Yeah, you hear him screaming. And Huey's just like, oh my gosh, he's shocked. And Lamplighter kills himself. And he drops to his knees as he's dying. And he's totally on fire. And then the sprinkler system and the fire alarms start going off. Yeah. And it's not putting him out right away necessarily, but he's there on fire. Alarms are going off. Huey's there just like, what the heck is going on? Meanwhile, the cell that Starlight was in, she couldn't use her powers. Now, we found out in the last episode, and maybe it was something that was obvious, but wasn't obvious to everyone. We found out in the last episode, or I found out, I should say, she can't use her powers if there's not electricity around, if there's not power around. So the cell that she was in, she couldn't break out of. At the beginning, when they first capture, she tries. She goes over to, like, where the light is, and she's trying to draw some power, but she can't. Now, as the alarm system goes off, there's another light in her cell, and blinking. It's going off, blinking, and she finds out, okay, let me try and go there. She starts to get a little bit of power, and you see, okay, she's going to try to break out here. Now, with Huey, Lamplighter is dead on the floor. The sprinklers have finally put him out, and he realizes, okay, well, I still got to try and find Starlight. I still got to try to get out of here. But the only way that he knew to get out was the same way he got in, which was using the hand, you know, scanner that Lamplighter was using. And so Huey starts to leave, but then he comes back. He's like, oh, man, I need his hand. So he breaks this giant glass bottle and goes over and just starts chunking away at Lamplighter's hand. Now, this is gruesome. Not that this show is not gruesome, but it's just like they show him just there, just chomping away at it, and essentially just cuts his whole hand off with this thick glass bottle that he breaks. And it's just disgusting because you've got this dead, charred, burnt body, and then he takes his hand off. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I get they had to do this for the show, for this, like, little plot device, but, like, if his hand was the thing that was being read there, after it's on fire, it's not going to work anymore.
Those fingerprints, yeah. Unless, I don't know. Yeah, unless it's somehow DNA, but I'm pretty sure it's fingerprints.
Yeah, yeah. So Huey's, you know, trying to get out of there.
He's running around with a severed hand in his hands. That's the funniest part about it.
Right, right. And we've seen this before in other movies and TV shows where, you know, there's some sort of biometrics where they need some dead person to be able to do it. So we've seen it before where they take a hand or they take an eye out and it works. So, I mean, Huey. I get why they were doing, but yeah, just seeing Huey do it, it's kind of like, all right, this is crazy. But as he's leaving, then he hears, Starlight. He's looking for Starlight, but he hears someone else yelling like, help, help, let me out of here. And he opens a door with Lamplighter's hand. And he sees that it's Huey's mom, and she goes, "Aren't you that sweaty boy from the Believe conference?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh yeah. Hi. Where's Annie?" And she's, you know, not knowing because she got captured as well, obviously. But then out of the corner of their eye, then you see Annie's down.
My favorite thing is, she's like, "Is that a severed hand you're holding?" He goes, "Yeah, it is. But we got to go." And then they start to run down a hallway, and then. Yeah, Annie turns the corner.
Yeah.
And there she is. And it's a sweet moment because she's like, Huey.
What are you doing
here? And he just kind of has his dorky smile on, like, I came to save you.
You know what it kind of reminded me of? She
smiles a little bit, too.
You know what it reminded me of when Huey did that? That, like, kind of shoulder shrug type, you know, I'm just here. It reminded me of those TikTok memes that were going around a couple months back with Kevin James from the still from King of Queens. And he's just like,
Just they do like the stereo when the songs changed or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And then they have this weird staring smile moment because like she realized, oh, he came to save me, even though he's just human, you know?
Right.
And with no powers. So yeah, it's just sweet. But I want to go back to how she got to this point where she turned the corner.
Okay. Forgot.
We're going to rewind. While Huey is running downstairs looking for Starlight, Starlight had already broken out, and she got upstairs, I guess. Who knows where she was going or what she was doing, but then she gets completely...
She gets blindsided.
a little reference from earlier. It's all full circle. Yeah, she didn't have a left tackle protecting her here, and Black Noir just comes in and freaking tackles her, throws her through a wall into the conference room, and they have a nice little fight here, right?
I was super happy because again, I don't know why I want to see him so much. I guess just because of the mystery behind him, but whenever he's on screen, I am happy to see him because. You know, he is a cool character. He's almost like that one ninja dude in G.I. Joe. But I just love seeing him.
To me, he's Batman, but with like superpowers and doesn't talk.
Okay, but, I can kind of see that a little bit. But yeah, they have it out. I mean, they're going blow for blow. Starlight does try. She at one point she even does use her powers and knocks him back into a wall, and they're kind of going blow for blow. But for the most part. Black Noir is overpowering her. At one point, I think he grabs like a giant boulder and is just like smashing it over her head. And she is
throws her through pillars, all this.
Yeah,
stuff.
He starts smashing her head through the table, breaks the whole table. The whole
table breaks. Yep, it was a nut. It was a pretty wild fight. Now again, she was getting beat the hell up for the most part.
Yeah,
a couple punchbacks, but she's trying. But finally, at one point, he has her down, hand on her throat.
Yeah, he's choking her. And you kind of see Starlight, she's, you know, looking up at him. She's doing the typical, like, you know, she's like dying, essentially. And she's kind of blacks out a little bit. And Black Noir is there, hands on her. But then you see her eyes open back up. Black Noir is somehow off of her. And we see that somebody had grabbed him. And it is none other than Queen Maeve here to save the day.
Got a hand around his neck and an arm around his neck, lifts up his mask. So
which we find out face. Here then, Black Noir actually is black.
Yes, Black Noir is black.
But something's up with his face, though. Like, did you notice that?
It's scarred because he's probably been through so much shit. Like, yeah. Remember he got the one soup terrorist blew up right on him, you know, stuff like that. He's gone through that his whole career, I'm sure.
Yeah. But she pulls up his mask and opens his mouth and puts something in his mouth. Yeah. And I didn't realize it was a candy bar at first. I just saw that she shoved something in his mouth, and he immediately kind of just starts choking. And I'm like, did she just put something in his mouth that he's like choking on or whatever? And as he's sitting there kind of like choking out, Starlight gets up and she's like, was that an Almond Joy? Yeah. And if we recall, Almond Joys were referenced a couple of times in an episode earlier this season with the security analyst from Vought. She was eating an Almond Joy, and then Huey and Starlight were talking about it. But
yeah, and he did try to she did try to give Black Noir an Almond Joy, and he didn't want it.
Yeah,
and now we know why.
Well, we find out then. Maeve says, "Yeah, he's got a tree nut allergy." So
and he
yeah,
tries to pull an EpiPen, and she kicks it away, and he's right for it. And she kicks it even further away.
Right, right. Now, let me ask you this: you obviously know, but when you had watched this for the first time, did you think he was dead? Because I'm of the mindset of like, until you see someone like, you know, with their head severed or something like that, you can't ever like truly think someone's dead. Did you think he was dead the first time you watched it?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, and don't tell me. I don't know. I'm assuming he is probably dead, but I'm hoping he's not. I like Black Noir. I hope he isn't actually dead, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're kind of walking away here then, and Starlight looks at Maeve and she's like, "Come on, come with me." And she's, you know, just like, "No, I got to stay."
Shakes her head, epic moment, and just walks away.
Yeah. Now the thing here that I'm wondering is, are they going to know that Maeve killed Black Noir, or at least attempted to, if he's not dead? Because if not, then they have to assume maybe that Starlight did. But I'm just wondering like how this is going to play out, because if she's killed Black Noir or attempted to, however we want to, you know, wrap this up, if he's not actually dead, they have to know that something's up. But
yeah, if she doesn't kill him, he can. If he somehow can write something down, you know, he can tell everybody.
Yeah. So, Huey meets up with Starlight, her mom. They get out of there. We cut then to the next day, or not the next day, but later then. Grace Mallory is freaking out because Lamplighter was supposed to be the star witness in the hearings. And they're like the next day. And she calls Billy. Billy tells her, "Oh, I've got it under control." We find out then that he has it under control because he's got Vogelbaum is going to be the new star witness. So we cut the next day to the trial or the hearing, and the boys are there with Starlight and her mom. They're watching it on TV. Everybody's watching this on TV. It's a huge deal. You know, there's a lot of press there. There's a lot of people. And they find out then that Vogelbaum is going to testify. He comes in his wheelchair, and when he comes in, Stormfront and Homelander, they're there at the hearing as well, and Homelander was kind of surprised.
Him have a little look at each other, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Vogelbaum comes up, and they, you know, start to swear him in, you know, give him the whole, "Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth," yada, yada, which apparently they don't actually say in real life. Like, that's I could have sworn that that was it, but I guess that's just a thing that they say in TV and movies. I don't know. If you're a lawyer out there, let us know if that's something they legit say.
Yeah.
But
that's something I didn't know.
Yeah. So they're swearing him in, and they basically say, you know, the guy that's leading these proceedings, he says, "Okay, you know, you have 5 minutes for your opening statements," and then boom, out of nowhere, this guy's head just explodes. And everyone's shocked. Like, everyone's like, "Oh my gosh." But they're all kind of just standing still there, and there's blood on all the people that are around him. Some of it kind of splattered into the crowd. And then you look, and Vogelbaum's head explodes. Yep. And everybody at this point just is in panic. They start getting up. They're running away. And like one by one, all these people's heads start to explode. And it's the same kind of explosion that happened to Susan Rayner's head. It's just like pop. And it's just blood, brains, and you know, everything else flying all over the place.
And it's just sporadic people throughout the whole crowd. At one point, the person that's replacing A-Train, gets up.
Yeah, Shockwave his head explodes. And I'm just like, okay, well, Shockwave.
By the way, if you're so fast and that starts to happen, get the fuck out of here.
Exactly. Yeah, if you're really going to be the guy that's replacing the fastest man alive, A-Train, it's like, peace. Now, as people's heads are exploding, Homelander and Stormfront even seemed kind of shocked.
They're confused.
They're confused as well. They don't know what's going on. They're kind of looking around. And the crazy thing is they're looking around, but they're not really trying to prevent anything from happening, obviously, because this is going to work out to their benefit if this whole trial doesn't happen. Yeah. But everyone's heads are exploding. Congressman Newman, she's running around. People's heads are exploding around her. Grace Mallory tries to grab her to get her out of there. They kind of trip and fall. Grace gets her out of there then, it seems, eventually. But heads are exploding all over the place. And, you know, this trial is pretty much going nowhere. The boys are watching it on TV.
It's a mess.
Yeah. And they're not happy. And at one point, Billy walks away and just, you know, has his head down. And it just it sucks because every step of the way from like the ending of season one into the beginning of this, the boys are just making, you know, two steps forward just to take three steps back. It's like every time they get somewhere, it's just they're back at square one.
Always feel bad for them.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the end of the episode here. Heads popping, everything going to shit.
I do want to mention at one point, so A-Train and the Deep are watching the trial too, and they're in shock. But the Deep goes like this to his head. He puts his hands around his head.
Trying to make sure it's still there. Like,
it's like, you're such a weirdo, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so we've got one episode left here, and I know I've said it multiple times, but I just don't know how they're going to top this and where they're going to go next. There are certain parts of this show that are a little predictable, but then there's other parts like this where you just don't see something like that coming. And, you know, it's like, what's going to happen now? You know, the only, I guess, kind of, I don't want to say gripe, but the only thing I'm concerned about here is that we're kind of falling into a formulaic pattern. I mean, I just said it, like every time the boys get a leg up, then they're, you know, they're being knocked down a peg or two here. And I don't know how season three is going to be, but I'm kind of hoping that this cycle gets broken, that either, you know, the boys get knocked way, way down and, you know, some big event happens, or I want them to get a win and just, you know, be able to celebrate, even if it's just momentarily, you know, for a little bit. I don't want this cycle to keep happening, because then
then you're watching the same thing over and over again. Right.
They're telling the story in different ways, I guess, but it's just the same formula. And another show that I was like that suffered from this problem pretty badly was Suits. I don't want to get too off topic here, but that show was the same thing where it's like the same formula kept happening. And that show lasted 9 seasons when it really should have been maybe 5 or 6. So I really don't want this to be a cycle with the boys.
Yeah.
Hopefully season 3 breaks that.
I agree, because I think the one thing I've mentioned a few times here is another thing that happens in the show is how do they get a suit to, you know, to be quieter to whoever they want? It's always, oh, I have these pictures of you, you know, and I'll put them on social media. And so we need to, there, it's fine for now, but that can't keep happening, you know? So, you know what, let's put it this way. I really enjoyed season 3. I'm not going to be, I can't remember if they stick to the formula or not, you know, but,
we'll be watching it moving forward here.
Yeah. Well, what a wild episode. I remember the first time watching all these heads explode and I was just like, what the hell just happened? And I tell you what, there's still some twists and turns for next episode. And
all right, well, I'm excited to see him.
Girls, so, get it done.
Oh, dropping some hints, eh?
Yeah, a little hint.
Okay,
you have no idea what they get done. Girls, get it done.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah,
I'll be interested to see. But yeah, definitely stay tuned for more episodes of The Boys on the Small Screen Couch Commentary. We mentioned it before, and if you don't know by now, episodes of The Boys are actually going to be moving to Mondays here. By the time you're hearing this, it'll probably already be out on a Monday. And we'll be going into season 3 right after this. and Gen V right after that. Hopefully all in time for the premiere of season 4, where we'll all be on the same page. Come back, listen to us some more. And hopefully by the time season 4 comes out, we can continue to hear some conversations with each other and get a little bit more engagement with you all.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget, we are going to be doing a new one, Fallout.
Yes. Fallout premieres April 11th.
April 11th.
By the time you hear this, it'll already be out. And we'll be doing that show, which will be taking the place of Avatar The Last Airbender on our Friday slot. And we're gonna try and branch out a little bit as well, some other types of content. Keep an eye on our socials, our Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, X/Twitter. Who knows? Maybe we'll pop up somewhere else for you guys.
Yeah.
Maybe. All right. Well, that ends this episode. We will see you guys next week. Peace.
Peace.